Okay, it's time for us to get started. I was just fiddling with my demos, which in classic tradition, I've hit a glitch this morning, so hopefully this is all going to work well. So hello everyone, welcome. Bright and early Wednesday morning. I'm Ben Armstrong, Program Manager on the Hyper-V team, and I'm here today to give you a sneak peek of everything that's in Hyper-V and the technical preview that we've just released. So, I do want to be really clear up front. I'm actually really looking forward to this session. This is exactly my kind of session because this session is going to be very low level, focused on details, just going through, talking about what's there. It is not a complete overview of everything that will be in the final release of Windows Server. I'm not going to be talking about anything today about like, well, you know, here's our vision of what's going to be there at, you know, when we finally ship. In fact, I can tell you right now, I guarantee that there are features that are going to be there when we ship that I'm not showing you today. I am just showing you what's going on. Similarly, I'm not going to be telling you, like, here's the big end-to-end story. There's a lot of stuff that I'm going to be showing you today that, frankly, on the development team, we're halfway through building, so maybe we only have PowerShell. There's a couple of features where I'm having to use scripts in order to make them work. Throughout the presentation, I'm going to have callouts where I show you, like, here's a PowerShell command that I had to use. And a bit of a fun one for a Microsoft presentation, because I'm trying to focus on, you know, letting you know what you can do with the technical preview, there are also a couple of cases where I'm going to let you know, hey, in the technical preview build that went out, there's a bug, and here's how you work around it. So it should be pretty fun. Looking forward to seeing which of my demos fail, because I can guarantee one of them will at least. So when we started working on the next release of Windows Server, there are a couple of big themes that we looked at. And that informed the features that we've built. So the first one is, what do we need to do to continue to make cloud computing great with Hyper-V? And there are a couple of key areas here that we heard from you all about. The first one is making it easier to deploy. So let's have a show of hands here. How many people here are running Hyper-V 2012 in their environment? So 2012. So how many people are running 2012 or 2 in their environment? That's fantastic to see. So you're probably all aware that 2012 to 2012 or 2, we added cross-version live migration to try and make it easier to upgrade. But that was still problematic because you had to purchase hardware, you had to, you know, do a lot of careful orchestration, and you could get in real trouble if you hit a problem during that migration because it was a one-way path. So in the technical preview, we have extended that in a couple of ways. The first thing is we have the rolling cluster upgrade support. So you can now add, you know, technical preview nodes to a 2012 or 2 cluster. And in fact, we have a session later on this week which is going to go into great detail about, you know, how exactly you do that and what that flow looks like. But from the Hyper-V side of things, there's actually some key and really interesting technology that we did to support this. So what we did was we completely changed the way we do VM upgrade. So in the past, when you bought a virtual machine into Hyper-V, whether it was you did an in-place upgrade, you did an import, you did a whatever, as part of that, bringing that virtual machine in, if it was from a previous version of Hyper-V, we would automatically upgrade it, just straight away. And in fact, you know, this was a frequent customer pain point, was like, hey, I bought a virtual machine across, and now I want to move it back. And one of the challenges architecturally from our side of things was we would do that upgrade so early in the process that Hyper-V genuinely did not know that this virtual machine had come from an earlier version. You know, once the virtual machine existed, we couldn't tell, has this been created new or did it come from an earlier version? So there was no way to roll back upgrade processes. There was no way to move back. So in the technical preview, we've made a big change here. we no longer automatically upgrade a virtual machine. If you bring a virtual machine into Hyper-V, whether you import it, in-place upgrade, so on, we will automatically go, hey, that's from 2012 R2. We are leaving it in 2012 R2 compatibility mode. And a couple of things to highlight here. The first thing is, while it's in that mode, everything remains compatible. So you can live migrate back. You can use save states. You can use checkpoints. You can use import-export. You can use backup restore. All these things remain fully compatible with 2012 R2. So it's very easy, you know, to stand up technical preview on a single box in your environment and move virtual machines back and forth from that. Another thing that I want to highlight, though, because this is something that people jump to, is on the Hyper-V side of things, we are fully supporting virtual machines that are in 2012 R2 compatibility mode for long term. We're not saying, oh, this is just a two-week thing while you upgrade and so on. Now, there are other teams, different technologies that have different statements. For us, we felt that was really important because I don't know if you guys picked up on this. When I asked how many people were running 2012, I would say about 70% of the room. And when I said 2012 R2, about 70% of the room, which means there's a bunch of you running both 2012 and 2012 R2 in your environments. Similarly, we expect that there are going to be a bunch of people who are going to be running 2012 R2 and the next release of Windows Server in their environments for a sizable period of time. And we want those people to be able to do cross-cluster live migration and do different virtual machine mobility and know that they can move back and adjust their workload. So what we've now introduced with all of this is there is now an explicit process for upgrading a virtual machine. So if you have a virtual machine and it's 2012 R2 compatible, but there are some new features that you want to have access to, because obviously we won't enable those features if you want it to be 2012 R2 compatible, you now can explicitly say, okay, this virtual machine, I want to upgrade it to the next version of Windows Server. And once you do that, that's a point of no return, and you can't move that virtual machine back anymore. So in the technical preview, we have all this infrastructure in place. It's a PowerShell command. As I said, we have a lot of things where we haven't got the UI together and so on, so lots of PowerShell and technical preview. If you bring a virtual machine across, you're going to see that it's maintained in compatibility mode, and there's a PowerShell command to move it over. So with that, let me show you what this looks like. So here I've got Hyper-V, I've got technical preview. This is the build that went out, standard build. And I'm going to say I want to do my upgrade demo, which will just fire up that virtual machine. So the first thing to highlight is if you look in the UI, we now have the version field over here. And this is actually just a piece of curiosity. We've actually always had the version field internally in Hyper-V. We've just never exposed it to users because, hey, we automatically upgrade. There's no point in exposing it. So from our own internal schema, virtual machines created on 2012 R2 are version 5. All of my other virtual machines here are created with technical preview, so they're version 6. But double-clicked on the wrong one. I just want to quickly show you. I'll bring this up. So here's a virtual machine that I created on a 2012 R2 host. I bought it across. I haven't upgraded it. Everything works. Everything looks and feels just the way it would. There are, like, all the features that I had in 2012 R2 are there. But if there's a new feature that I want to take advantage of, I'm going to need to upgrade it. So we need to shut down the virtual machine to do this because we do make some pretty fundamental changes to the configuration file and to the architecture for it. And then there's this command here, update virtual machine configuration and the name of my virtual machine. We get a confirmation prompt because, as I mentioned, this is a no point of return operation. Once you've upgraded, you can't go back. So I'm going to say, yep, I want to upgrade. And now my lovely script just killed and restarted the Hyper-V manager because there is a bug here. I said I'd be talking about bugs. We have a caching bug in our UI where we won't show you the version number changed if you keep Hyper-V Manager open. So if I now go to my old virtual machine, you'll see the version is no longer 5, it's 6. My script has started it up, and if I log in, you'll see it's the same virtual machine. So very simple process, but the key thing here is it's now a manual process. You have to decide, do I want to upgrade this virtual machine or not? So let me just tell that to clean up, and we'll jump back to the presentation. Now, one thing to highlight with the tech preview is there is a bug that some people have been encountering. I actually haven't hit this myself, and I do it dozens of times in that demos, but we have had some reports on the forums and from our MVPs where they've upgraded a Generation 2 virtual machine, and after they've done the upgrade, they've received errors about secure boot. There's a race condition in our upgrade. We've already found the bug and fixed it, but it doesn't set the secure boot template properly. So you can, if you see this, just run this command, set VM firmware, VM name, secure boot template, Microsoft Windows, and then everything will start magically working again. So the next thing that we've worked on, thinking about cloud environments, is changing the way we do virtual machine servicing. So today, we release a new version of Hyper-V. Well, in the past, not in the future. In the past, we'd release a new version of Hyper-V. With that new version of Hyper-V would come new virtual machine drivers. We call them our integration components. And so we had a model where we would ship those drivers with the host operating system, and we would tell you that in order to be supported, you needed to have, you know, the version of the integration services or components that shipped with the host. Now, this made a lot of sense when we designed the system in 2008. However, it's not 2008 anymore. It's 2014, and I'd like to do a survey of the room. How many people here manage instances of Hyper-V or other virtualization software where they have virtual machines that they themselves do not have administrative access to? You know, someone else is admin. So I'd say about 10% of the room. How many people here have virtual machines that they use, whether it's inside their company or in a public service like Azure or with a local hoster, but how many people have machines that, virtual machines where they don't have administrative access to the virtualization host? They just have the virtual machine. So about 20%. So this is a real problem for those people, because there's no way to get your drivers right. No, if the guy who has the drivers doesn't have admin access to the virtual machine, and the guy who has admin access to the virtual machine has no idea what host he's running on, that's a real pain. It's also a big problem as we're doing more rapid releases of Windows Server. The fact of the matter is, there are plenty of drivers that are included in our virtual machine driver package, which when we released Windows Server 2012 R2, we hadn't made any changes to those drivers. And yet we released a new version because, hey, you know, you've got to have the whole package and you've got to have the whole thing there. So we're making a number of big changes here. The first thing that we're saying is we're making a support statement change to say, you know what? We are not going to release drivers with the host, or to say that in order to be supported, you have to have the latest version of the drivers. What we are doing is we're saying, you know what, and this is a novel idea, let's just release the drivers when we actually have updates for the drivers. And from a support point of view, let's just say, you know what, whatever host you're running, just have the latest version of the drivers. Now, the final thing that we're doing is with these two support decision changes, we're no longer including the drivers with Hyper-V. Instead, we're going to be distributing them through Windows Update straight to the guest. So what does this mean for you? Well, the first thing, and it's been fun to watch this, I've seen a couple of people confused and consternated on our forums about this, is that if you get the technical preview, fire up a virtual machine, you go to VM Connect, and where there's normally the insert integration services install media, that's no longer there, because in fact the media is no longer there. We are hoping that by the end of November we will have actually done our first release of the virtual machine drivers over Windows Update. So hopefully sometime in the next couple of weeks, and by the way, this won't be limited to just the Windows Server technical preview, over the next couple of weeks, you're actually going to start to see virtual machines that are saying, like, hey, I've got something on Windows Update. It's the latest drivers because I've detected that I'm a virtual machine. So we're completely changing the way we do deployment and servicing there. The next area we invested in was, you know, this was actually really fun. This was getting secure boot support for Linux. And I'm really happy about this. We've been talking a lot this week about the work that we've been doing to support Linux. We know that lots of people are running Linux in virtual machines, and we want to make sure that Hyper-V is a great place to run Linux inside of virtual machines. It was particularly fun. Last year I came out here, I talked about Generation 2 virtual machines, and one of the first questions we got was, hey, is Linux supported in a Generation 2 virtual machine? And I had to try and give the answer where I said, well, it's not supported, but trust me, it's not because we're Microsoft and we're evil. It's just because we haven't got around to doing the work and working with the Linux community. So since then, in fact, shortly after TechEd Europe last year, we were able to come out and say, hey, look, you know, we're starting to get Linux distributions that support running in Generation 2 virtual machines. However, they didn't support Secure Boot. And Secure Boot is the technology where we're able to verify that the kernel that you're getting and the kernel mode code that you're getting is actually the kernel that you thought you were getting, and that you haven't been rootkitted and you haven't been compromised. So with the technical preview, we are now able to support Secure Boot for Linux. And there are already two distributions out there that have support for this. So there's Ubuntu and SUSE Linux. Both of them work. The one thing to be aware of is the Linux distributions use a different certificate to Windows. So if you go and grab a technical preview build right now and just fire up a Generation 2 virtual machine and try and put one of these OSs in there, it's going to sit there and say, like, meh, I don't recognize this. This isn't properly signed. What you need to do is you need to change the certificate that we're using for Secure Boot. So on the host side, we now have two certificates. We have the Microsoft Windows certificate, and we have the Microsoft UEFI Certificate Authority, which is the one used by various Linux distributions. So you're going to want to create a virtual machine, you're going to want to run this commandlet, and then you can install those Linux distributions and have Secure Boot. And a final note on that, we have a great session virtualizing Linux and FreeBSD workloads. If you have Linux and FreeBSD in your environment, I'd strongly recommend that you go there. There's going to be lots of information and you know, some really good tips and tricks. So the next thing I want to talk about is the work that we've done on storage QoS. Now last year, I was out here demonstrating, hey, we've added storage QoS support for 2012 R2, and I demonstrated, hey, having a single virtual machine, I can go in and I can specify a cap on a disk and stop it from being, you know, chewing up all my bandwidth. And that was great, but it was really just a start. And this is an area where we're investing more, and we're going to be bringing more functionality. Now, there are a couple of big challenges that we saw with storage QoS. The first one is that, hey, we've got this technology that allows you to go in and say, you know, for this virtual machine, cap it at this amount. And that all works great on a single Hyper-V server. But it doesn't really work so great if you have, you know, half a dozen Hyper-V servers talking to a common piece of storage backend. Because in 2012 R2, those Hyper-V servers are not aware that they're competing with each other for storage bandwidth. So in the technical preview, what we've done is we've worked very closely with the folks on the scale-out file server team to start to build intelligence into the scale-out file server. So we're now introducing a new mode of operation for storage costs. We still have what we had in 2012 R2, where you can go to Hyper-V and go to the virtual machine and configure the storage cost properties. But in the technical preview, you can actually now go to the scale-out file server and configure the storage cost policies on the virtual hard drives there. And this enables a couple of really interesting scenarios. The first one is, yes, it means that if you have multiple Hyper-V servers talking to the same file server on the back end, all your storage cost policies get, you know, respected. The second thing is, it actually allows us to do some really cool things where we can now start pooling storage cost policies and having a single policy that applies to multiple virtual hard drives instead of just one. Now, we do have a great session that goes into great depth on this. Unfortunately, I hate to tell you, it is happening right now. So if you really care about storage costs and you run out of the room in the next 2 minutes, I won't take offense. After that, I will take offense. But I would encourage you all, it is being recorded, and I'm going to do a short demo of storage costs. If you want to see lots of details about how it all works under the covers, please look up the video for this afterwards. So with that, let's switch across to my demo system and show you some of this in action. Okay, so first let's do our Linux secure boot demo. This is a nice simple demo. I've got Ubuntu running inside of a Generation 2 virtual machine. If I bring up the settings, you're going to see it's a Generation 2, and Secure Boot is enabled on this virtual machine. I've already run the PowerShell commandlet to give it the right certificate. Now, if you're someone who wants to try and repeat these demos yourself, a great tool on Linux is FWTS. It's the firmware toolset. You can get it on most distros using their preferred package manager. But if you run this command, FWTS UEFI dump, and grep it for entries that mention secure, and type your password incorrectly, which I think I just messed up. Yes. You can see that it comes up and says, yep, secure boot's enabled and fully operational for this virtual machine. So nice little demo. Now for the more complicated one, which is my storage cost demo. So this takes a little while to fire up. I am using all sorts of tricks to run this on my laptop locally. So what I actually have is, because the distributed storage cost technology requires that you have a scale-out file server, I have a scale-out file server configured inside a virtual machine, which I then have virtual machines pointing to. So it's a bit complicated, but it allows me to do this without having network connectivity. So right now, it's firing up my scale-out file server, and it's waiting for it to respond to the network. And as soon as it responds to a network ping, it's going to fire up my workload virtual machines. So just a moment while that happens. So I've got my scale-out file server running. Now, I'm going to just be demonstrating a small bit of what the storage cost can do. The demos that are being done by Patrick, he's going to be showing how this works on large numbers of virtual machines and different scale points. I'm just going to be showing you two virtual machines because that's the easiest thing to do in my environment. And this is taking longer than it did when I practiced. Normally, by about 58 seconds, we've found the virtual machine. Let's see what's happening. I am going to flip back to the slides. I'll see if that comes back, and we'll jump back to the demo if it sorts itself out. So one thing to be aware of, there is a bug here. This is actually an SMB bug that shipped in the technical preview. Now, obviously, with the distributed storage costs, we have the dependency on scale-up file server. It only works if you're running VHDs on SMB. Specifically, the technical preview build, once again, this is a bug that we fixed shortly thereafter. There's a very weird error message that you can get, and I've never seen this before with Hyper-V, so it's fairly easy to spot. It's the client certificate does not contain a valid UPN. If you see that error message, you need to change a register key on the Hyper-V server, not on the scale-out file server. So you make that change on the Hyper-V server, and then everything should come good. Just a second. I'm going to kick my demo laptop to see if I can make it sort itself out. So the next thing I want to talk about is work that we've been doing to make things work better at scale. Now, we have a lot of cool technology in Hyper-V, which we're really proud of, but over the last year or two, as we've had more customers doing larger and larger cloud deployments, we've been hearing about problems that they've been hitting once they scale up the deployment. So there are a couple of big areas that we've invested in here. The first one has been changing the way we do backup. So we're actually, with the technical preview, we've introduced an entire new architecture for the way we do backup. Now, the big changes here, the first one is we've completely decoupled backing up virtual machines from backing up the underlying hardware. Today, with Windows Server 2012 R2, these are very tightly coupled operations. You basically back up a virtual machine by taking a VSS snapshot of the underlying hardware. But the problem that that causes is if you have, you know, a large Hyper-V deployment, you have 2,000 virtual machines that are all sitting on a single SAN on the back end, and you say, I want to back up my environment. That results in 2,000, you know, volume-wide SAN snapshots being taken, you know, one for each virtual machine. And that's not scalable, that's not efficient. So we've done a lot of work to make it so that backup vendors can now go in, stage the backup for all the virtual machines, and only take one snapshot against the SAN on the background. The next thing that we've done is we're adding support for built-in change tracking. We believe this is actually a really big and important thing to do. So today, you know, most backup software that you get for Hyper-V, you install it, and they're actually putting a kernel mode driver in your parent partition in order to allow them to do efficient change block tracking. Now, this is a problem for everyone. You know, it's a problem for us because it increases the complexity. It's another point of failure. It's another potential problem. It's a problem for our backup partners because that's a lot of work that they have to do. And in fact, these kernel mode drivers that they develop are often the primary reason why it takes them time to get versions of their backup software that supports the latest versions of Windows. So we're really excited to be putting this into the platform, and we're working with a number of our backup vendors to make sure that they have great offerings ready when we go live with next version of Windows Server. So there was a session yesterday that went deep on this and talked through all the details. So if you're interested in that, you can pull up the video and see all the details there. Just a second. I'm trying to pull back my demo system. So the next change that we've made is around the virtual machine configuration. Now, I'll be honest, this is a very nerdy change. This is actually not the sort of thing I would normally talk about at a tech ed. And in fact, you would be surprised how much time over the last couple of releases that we've spent tuning and optimizing our virtual machine configuration files. Because for most of you, you probably think, so what? You know, I've got a virtual machine, it's got a configuration file, and that's not a big deal. But once again, this comes to an issue of scale. So when you look at, you know, a high-end deployment of Hyper-V on Windows Server 2012 R2, and when you're looking at, okay, I have 2,000 virtual machines that are sitting on a shared storage on the back end. And oh, by the way, I have features like Hyper-V Replica enabled on a bunch of those virtual machines, which is constantly making configuration changes as it's tracking replication information. We've actually seen a number of customer deployments now where our current configuration model becomes a performance bottleneck. It actually slows down the system. More than that, one of our biggest challenges that we see, and this is really frustrating for us, is that every now and then we get reports from customers of corrupted configuration files. In fact, let's do a show of hands here. Who here has had a corrupted configuration file for a virtual machine? See? Now let me tell you, we have spent literally man years over the last 5 years trying to make our configuration files more resilient to corruption. We did a huge amount of effort in 2012 R2 to try and make our configuration files more resilient to corruption. And unfortunately, the long and the short of it is none of it worked. So coming into the next release of Windows Server, we actually went back to the drawing board, and we've made some pretty drastic changes here. We are completely changing the file format. Previously, we had an XML file format, great and easy to develop on, not designed for efficiency at scale, not designed for resiliency. So we're changing to a binary format, and one of the key things that we've invested in that is this binary format now implements change logging. So anytime that someone goes to make a configuration change to a virtual machine, we first write it out to a log, we then replay that log into the configuration file, and then we clear the log. So if there is any storage glitch at any stage in the process, we should be able to guarantee that the configuration file is not corrupted. So, fingers crossed, knock on wood. I'm really eager. Please, so side note, please, if you see any virtual machine configuration file corruption on the technical preview build, email me straight away, ben.armstrong@microsoft.com, because we want to know what on earth is going on there. This is a big area of focus for us. So what does this mean for you guys? There are a couple of things. The first thing is obviously there are different file extensions. I'll show you what that looks like in just a second. The second thing, though, is we have never, ever supported people editing our virtual machine configuration files outside of Hyper-V, but I know people do. And for those people, that's not going to be possible anymore because it's not an XML file. If you open it up in Notepad, you'll see a bunch of gibberish. So I'm sure that there are some people in the room right now who are having heartburn and going, but I rely on that. We believe you should be able to do anything that you need to do with a virtual machine configuration file through our documented and supported APIs. So if you have a scenario which you think is going to be broken by this, please also come and talk to me, and I'll happily step through your scenario and see if we can figure out what it's going to take to make it work. So now I'm supposed to demo VM configuration, but I've got my storage course demo up and running. So we're going to do that one first, and then I'll show you the configuration stuff. Gets the password right on the third time. Fantastic. Kick this off. So here I have, for the storage course demo, just stepping you through. I have the scale-up file server that's running. I have these two virtual machines are configured, so they're using the same storage that's offered by the scale-up file server. And I have Iometer configured in both virtual machines to just go flat out. So that's soaking up all the I.O. that you can get. So this system can get about 10 to 14,000 IOPS. And you see it's fairly evenly divided between these. I mean, there's some fluctuation, but that's what usually happens. Now, in 2012 R2, I could go in and I could cap one of these. But in the technical preview, working with Scale-Out File Server, there are actually two new things that we allow you to do. I'm only going to be demonstrating one of them. As I mentioned, check out the video of the storage course session to see more demos and more information. The first one is we actually now allow you to go in and for important virtual machines, rather than specifying a cap, specify a reserve. Say, you know what, whatever's happening on this file server, this virtual hard drive must get at least 1,000 IOPS. The other thing that we allow you to do is we allow you to have single policies apply to multiple virtual machines. And that's what I'm going to do here. So I have a QoS policy on my file server that says only limit them to 2,000 IOPS. And I've just applied that to both the virtual machines. So right now, you've seen they've gone from unlimited to they're splitting 2,000 IOPS between them. If I shut down Iometer on one of these, what you'll see is that the other one will fairly quickly jump up to 2,000 IOPS and hit the limit. So this actually allows you to be a lot more flexible in how you configure your environment and manage limits. Come on, it's supposed to jump up. There we go. So this gives you a lot more control and makes it a lot easier when you've got all these workloads on a single piece of storage to control what's happening. And once again, please check out the video for the session that's going on at this time. So I was also going to show you the VM configuration stuff. So my script earlier on that upgraded my old virtual machine has actually gone back and restored the old virtual machine. So if we come back here, you can see my old virtual machine is version 5 again. So if I go to my virtual machines folder, you can actually see here's the one old virtual machine. So if you don't update a virtual machine, it still continues to run with an XML file. All my other virtual machines have VMCX and VMRS files. So the VMCX file replaces our XML file for configuration. The VMRS file actually replaces our bin and VSV files that we use for the virtual machine state. So if you want to get really nerdy, VMRS stands for Virtual Machine Runtime State. So you can actually see I have a virtual machine that's in a safe state. It's got a bigger VMRS file than the other ones. So let's jump back. And now for easily my favorite section of this deck. And that is, you know, we had some high-level, you know, customer feedback, some problems that we're going after. But there is actually a lot of stuff that's in the technical preview build of Hyper-V where it is simply there because we've been talking to you guys and you've been saying, hey, you know, in day-to-day operations, this really annoys me. The lack of this functionality is a problem. Like, it'd be great if you guys could do better here. And there's actually a lot of little things that are in the technical preview that are about solving these operational problems. So the first one is a new feature that I'm really excited about that we call production checkpoints. So we have virtual machine checkpoints today in 2012 R2. It's incredibly handy. It's a very easy user experience that allows you to take a point in time image of a virtual machine and roll back to it. Great for development and test. Now, let's actually let's do a survey of the room. From Microsoft's point of view, are virtual machine checkpoints supported in production? Yes or no? Anyone? Thank you. We have been saying for years they are not supported in production. No one listens to us. I know this. Everyone uses them in production. You know, and I talk to customers, and the story is always the same. I'm going to do a dangerous change to a virtual machine. So I take a checkpoint as a safety net. I make my change. If everything goes well, I delete the checkpoint. If it goes wrong, I roll back. And this actually works for most customers because, frankly, you're better at your job than you think you are, and most of the time, the change works, so you don't have to roll back. And the reason why we've always said this isn't supported for production environments is if you think about it, if that's an Exchange server, a SQL server, a file server, whatever, you roll it back with all the memory state, it thinks it has all the clients connected to it, it thinks it has the, you know, IO operations in flight, that you don't want a server to have. So we're introducing production checkpoints, which gives you the exact same user experience that you get with checkpoints today, only instead of capturing the memory state, we use VSS to get a data-consistent snapshot inside the virtual machine. So your experience taking the checkpoint and deleting it is exactly the same, only now, if you do apply the checkpoint, rather than bringing you back to the memory state where you were, it's like you have a clean backup of your server that's being restored. So I'll show you what that looks like in a little bit. I'm going to try and demo all these together. Another big one that we got asked for was adding support for hot add a virtual hard drive to replica. We added the ability to do a hot add and remove of virtual hard drives to virtual machines. We added Hyper-V replica, but these two things didn't work so well together. And we got a lot of people frustrated because they found that if they hot added a virtual hard drive to a virtual machine that was being replicated, then replication would fail. So now, that doesn't happen. Instead, what happens is when you add a virtual hard drive, it doesn't get automatically added to the replication set, but replication continues to work fine. And at any stage, while the virtual machine is still running, you can actually go in, use this PowerShell commandlet to add and remove virtual hard drives from the replication set. It will automatically resynchronize, and everything just works. So making that experience a lot more seamless. Another big common customer request, is, hey, we love dynamic memory, however, we can't use it on all our workloads. Just let me resize memory for static virtual machines as well. So we've added that. In the technical preview build, if you're running a technical preview guest on a technical preview host, you can go in with statically configured memory, and you can change memory both up and down while the virtual machine's running. Hot add and remove of network adapters. Another big feature request, also now in the technical preview. So this one is just any generation 2 virtual machine. You can go in, hot add and remove network adapters to your heart's content. Network adapter identification. This one's actually really interesting. Let's have a show of hands here. How many people here have ever had that moment where they've created a virtual machine with a couple of network adapters, and they've gone inside to configure the IP address, and they've sat there and looked and gone, crap, which one is it? Yeah. So this is very PowerShell-y at this point in time, but in the technical preview, we actually allow you, when you add a network adapter, to give it a name, which is then exposed inside the virtual machine. So from inside the virtual machine, you can actually go and check and be like, oh, this adapter is that one. Very convenient. The next area that we've made a bunch of investments is actually around a number of remote management experiences with Hyper-V Manager. And this is, once again, listening to people's feedback. So to just go down the list, we've changed it to use WinRM instead of raw WMI. So it's easier to get over firewalls and traversal and so on. A lot less configuration. The long and the short of it is, you shouldn't need to use HV remote in order to get the system working anymore. It should just work. The next thing that we've done, and this was a huge customer request, is we've added support for alternate credentials. So now when you connect to a Hyper-V server, you can actually say, no, I'm a good person. I'm not logged in as my server admin on my desktop account. Let me connect using different credentials, and that all works. We've also added the ability to be able to connect to a Hyper-V server just using the IP address, not using the name. Now, if any of you follow my blog, you will know that I suck at setting up name resolution. So this actually makes me really happy, because if you have a network problem and you're trying to solve things, the first thing you want to do is make sure all your virtual machines are okay. You don't want to have to go and solve network resolution issues. So with all of that, let's try and do a whole bunch of demos and see what we can get going here. There we go. So first thing, let's look at production checkpoints. So here's a virtual machine that I have configured to use standard checkpoints. Now, I'm sure some of you, when I was talking about production checkpoints, were going like, it's great, but I really like checkpoints the way they are. We get that, and we think that the standard checkpoint that we have is great technology for development and test for desktop environments. So that's all still there, and you can actually go into a virtual machine and say, this virtual machine, I want it to use standard checkpoints. This one, I want it to use production checkpoints. So I'm just going to type something here and take a standard checkpoint. Now, this all works through the UI. I'm just doing this with PowerShell so I don't fat finger things. So the checkpoint's been taken, and I can move things around, all standard stuff, and then I can revert to the checkpoint. And you see, all my data's saved, but the application is exactly where I wanted it. Great for a dev test environment. Not what you want if this is running a production server workload. So let's now have a look at the same experience using production checkpoints. So I'm going to bring up a separate virtual machine. Got Notepad. I'm going to type some data, and I'm going to, now I could just take the checkpoint using the button, but I'd probably type the name in wrong and break my script, so I'm just going to use my script, which will take a checkpoint. So once again, same experience, it's the same PowerShell commandlet, same UI, I can still interact with the virtual machine, but now we're using VSS to create the checkpoint. So checkpoint's taken, and at this stage, I can go into my UI, and I will even see, look, here's my checkpoint that was created by demo. So exactly the same experience for taking and managing checkpoints. Where things change, though, is when I apply this checkpoint. So let's say, this was my SQL server. I took a checkpoint. Something went wrong, and I want to roll back to that checkpoint. So I'm going to say, OK, let's revert to that checkpoint. Now, this time, instead of getting exactly the memory state, my virtual machine has just been rolled back to a clean backup state, and we've just done a boot. And so we're going to come in. And if I open my test document, you'll see, hey, yes, my data got saved. It's all there. So this is about delivering exactly the experience that you're used to, but doing so in a way that's fully safe and supported in a production environment. One thing I do want to quickly show you, we did a lot of configuration work here. So our default setting is to say that we will use production checkpoints if we believe the guest is capable of taking VSS backups. If it's not, we will create a standard checkpoint. You can come in here and you can say, let's say you have a workload where you're like, hey, the only way I'm enabling checkpoints is if I can guarantee it always uses VSS. You can say, don't use the fallback, uncheck that. If you have workloads where you're like, I want the old checkpoint experience, I want standard checkpoints, you can come in, configure that here. And one of the biggest requests I've had is, we do allow you to now just turn off checkpoints altogether. So if you have a workload where you're like, you know what? I don't want anyone coming in and taking checkpoints and messing with it. You can just come in here and say no, and we will not allow people to take checkpoints of that virtual machine. So there's the rundown on that. So we'll just clean that up. Now, what are we going to demonstrate next? Let's do all of our hot add remove stuff. So the question is, if you disable checkpoints, does it delete the old ones? No, it does not. It just stops the creation of new ones. So here I have two bunny rabbits. I always have to comment on this. I don't know why. Every time I start this virtual machine, I'm like, oh, bunnies. So I have a virtual machine. This is a generation 2 virtual machine that's configured with static memory. And if you come here, actually a really nice thing, and this has been another one that we've been asked for a lot, is if I go to the memory tab, even though that this is static memory, we're actually showing you the memory demand. This is a big request. People looked at dynamic memory and they're like, hey, I love knowing how much memory my workload actually wants. Please give it to us for static machines so that I can size them effectively as well. So we've got that there. We've got the memory demand. But so this is static virtual machine. I'm going to bring up Task Manager, and I'm going to change the amount of memory. Now, while I do this, I will highlight there is a bug in Task Manager in this build. So when I change this, what you're going to see is you'll see the values change over here, and they change down here, and the scale of the graph changes, but the number here doesn't always change. So keep an eye. No, sometimes it changes, sometimes it doesn't, so we'll see. So first we'll try and change up. Hey, all the values changed. So I now have 1.5 gig memory. I've got more memory. Similarly, I can change down. Let's see if we hit the bug this time. So let's say 800 meg. That value didn't change. But if you look over here, we've got 797. Down here, we've got 800. The scale of this graph has changed. But there's a bug that sometimes that value doesn't change. But static machine, I can now go in and I can change this. Now, this one is very specifically only if you're running the technical preview on the technical preview. So let me just bump that back. Next thing to show is hot add and remove of network adapters. So bring this up. I can just come in here, add a network adapter. There we go. Yay. Nice, simple demo. I've got another network adapter. Let's throw it away. Yay, network adapter gone. Now, the next one, this is, let me tell you, this demo, I think I've practiced this demo, and I have a 50% success rate on this demo. So hang in with me. It usually half succeeds, so we'll see. So as I mentioned, we have the named network adapters in the technical preview. This is a PowerShell only thing. When you add a network adapter using add VM network adapter, you can now specify a name. Now the challenge I have is if you've done this in real life, it's a bit tricky to hard, but to do. You can basically add network adapters faster than Windows can keep up. So I have to have some sleep scripts in here. But sometimes plug and play inside Windows gets a bit confused. So I'm going to try and add two network adapters with the exciting names of Fred and George. So we've added Fred, and we sleep for a little to try and let Windows catch up. And I think that's failed already. Ah, no, we've got that network adapter. I think I've failed in a new way on this demo. This is fantastic. Okay. That is not working. As I said, 50% success rate. So I am going to kill that. Luckily, because I knew I had some demos that are a bit hit or miss, I have actually written this PowerShell script so that if I kill it and bring it back up, it automatically runs a bunch of cleanup code for me. So I'm just going to kick that off, and it's going to clean things up. So while it's doing that, I will show you the remote management changes. So specifically, I'm going to show you the support for alternate credentials. If I come in here and say connect to server, you'll now see that I have an option to specify my user. If I do remote HV server, so this is a server which I have running where I don't have access. My account's been removed from the administrator accounts. It's come up and it said, meh, no, you don't have access to that system. So I can now come in and say, okay, that's right, I don't have access, but I know the account that does. See if I typed the password right. And there we go. We've connected to the server. I can see my virtual machine. Everything just works, even though I don't have admin credentials on it. I know what that error is. So let's go back. Let's try and do the network, the named network thing again, and see if we can have some success. Okay. Yes. Woo. Exciting time. My script worked. So I've just added two named network adapters. Now, if I actually, I called them Fred and George. If I go into the Hyper-V UI at this stage, you will actually see I have network adapter Fred and George. So I can see in the UI what I named them. Obviously, you're probably going to give them much more appropriate names like corporate network or, you know, something like that. But so that's there. Now, they've come up as Ethernet 10 and Ethernet 11. And I don't know which one's Fred and which one's George. So there are two ways that I can find this out from inside the virtual machine. The first one is if I go to Properties, Configure, Advanced, Hyper-V Network Adapter Name. Oh, it's Fred. All right, that's the one I want. So the second way is it's actually quite easy to pull this up using PowerShell. So I've got a little PowerShell script. I had earlier in the slides, I showed you the commands for pulling it up. And it can bring up the display value and tell me, like, OK, Ethernet 11 is George, Ethernet 10 is Fred. So very handy little improvement there. So I did want to show you the adding and removing disks from Replica. Unfortunately, I broke that demo last night. So at the end of this, if I have time to try that, I'll see if I can fix that demo. But with all that, let's jump back to the slides. So the final point before I move on to the next section is there is yet another bug that a lot of people have been hitting. And this is a result of the changes that we made to Hyper-V Manager for the remote management enhancements. And the bug specifically is, this confuses a lot of people. If we have a virtual machine that is reporting a OK heartbeat, but it doesn't report application state, then when Hyper-V Manager hits that virtual machine, it doesn't display it, and it doesn't display any virtual machines after that. So what this looks like to a user is like, meh, half my virtual machines are missing. And there's no easy way to know that, like, oh, there's, like if I alphabetically sort my virtual machine, there's one in the middle that's causing a problem. Luckily, if you hit this, if you have a bunch of virtual machines and you're like, what's going on, this little commandlet here, get VM, pipe it to setting the checking the heartbeat and then disabling the heartbeat, this will go through all your virtual machines, find any virtual machine that is reporting this specific heartbeat state, which is the one that we have problems with, and it will just disable the heartbeat integration component for those virtual machines. So very simple thing to do to work around this bug. It will be fixed. It's already fixed. It's just not in the technical preview. So the final thing, there are a couple of things I'd like to talk about, and this is getting really nerdy now, because this is the low-level stuff that we've done around enhancing the platform. So the first thing is, we've actually done a lot of work in the technical preview around improving hypervisor power management. And while I would love to spend 20 minutes talking through the details of power management, the reality is I have to deal with this. So I'm sure some of you have seen this. In fact, I know many people have seen this. These are all the people on Twitter complaining about Hyper-V and Connected Standby. And this last one hurts, by the way, because that's the official Microsoft Surface account telling someone to turn off Hyper-V on their Surface 3 so that they can get Connected Standby. So yeah. So the long and the short of it is, Connected Standby now works. So if you have a Surface 3 or if you have one of these devices which has, you know, the great power management features and you've been frustrated that, hey, I turn on Hyper-V and I lose my battery life, put the technical preview build on there. You'll be very happy with the improvement in battery life. Another thing is we've been working on remote effects. We have some people here talking about this week, but one of the big asks we've had here is support for OpenGL. That is now in the technical preview in remote effects. The final thing, let me just do this. And this is really nerdy, but this is my area, so I want to talk about it, is we're building a new management experience for Hyper-V. And what we're actually doing is we are building an experience where you can get the same management APIs that you get for Hyper-V on a single box at a cluster level. So for people who are familiar with our WMI interfaces and familiar with our programming model today, if you want to program against Hyper-V in a cluster, you have to constantly switch between the cluster APIs and the Hyper-V APIs, the clustering concepts and the Hyper-V concepts, and back and forth. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it so that you can program against a Hyper-V cluster like it were just one big Hyper-V server and use exactly the same, you know, language and APIs that you would use for that environment. Now, in the technical preview, this is very limited functionality. You can basically enumerate virtual machines and get some basic information. But I do want to show you what that looks like. So let's jump across. So here we have a Hyper-V cluster that I've set up. Got a couple of virtual machines spread across a couple of roles. And I have a little script that I've written. So what I'm going to do, and I've called it get VM information, is I point the same script first at a single Hyper-V server and then at the cluster. So this is the same code. When I run it against a single Hyper-V server, it says like, oh, no, node 1 has a single virtual machine. It's this. When I point it at a cluster, it says like, oh, this is a really big Hyper-V server which has a number of virtual machines. Now, I'm going to be evil and say, look, and this is the code. It's nice and simple. I don't expect you to read that. I will actually be blogging this and going into details on what's involved here. But the key thing is, it's a fairly small block of code, and it's the same code whether I'm talking to a single host or a cluster. So what we're hoping first, like, if this is your sort of thing, if you love playing with our interfaces, I'd love to get feedback on this. But second, what we're really hoping is that we have a lot of management partners out there, and we're hoping that this is going to make it a lot easier for them to work with Hyper-V in cluster deployments and provide great experiences there. So I have one last demo that I am madly going to try and do here because I broke my replica demo because I forgot that I'd added this system to a cluster. So now that my cluster is functional, I should be able to do this. Let me see if we can do this. Unfortunately, I am not going to be able to use my script for this, so I'm going to have to freeform this, which means it's almost guaranteed to fail. That's right. I need to... need to add the virtual machine to the cluster, because I had this demo all working before I turned my host into a clustered environment. Actually, this is going to fail. I just realized that's going to fail, so I'm going to give up. Actually, since I don't have to do this demo again, let me try and do something really dangerous. And I am going to eject myself from the cluster, which may actually enable my replica demo. It will break this demo system permanently, so please don't ask me to do any of these demos again. let's evict this from the cluster. Oh, it's going to get so angry at this because this is actually the only node that can actually run virtual machines. Okay, evicted from the cluster. Come on, you can do it. Yay, gone from the cluster. Now let's jump back here so that we're done. My cluster, yeah, it's going to fail at cluster cleanup because my cluster is now a broken mess. Okay, now that that's done, let's see if we can get this part to work. In 30 seconds. Okay, let's see, does that, yes, that's actually working. So we'll see if we can get that. So I'm gonna let that, it needs to set up the initial replication and we'll see if we can demo changing replication. So if we're lucky, we'll be able to do that. That is actually all that I had to present. So I'm going to open up for questions now. We'll jump back to the demo of the replica if we have time. So a couple of things. The first one is, this is just the stuff that's in the technical preview. This is all stuff that you can play with right now today. So there's more to come in the future, so stay tuned. Please try out the functionality. Let us know. You know, we are avidly watching the TechNet forums and watching the customer feedback. We're really interested to hear what is and isn't working and what you do and don't like. Please check out my blog. I will be posting all the scripts and all the PowerShell that I used for this today because I really want to make it easy for you guys to try this out and to give us feedback. So with all that, and also please do remember to fill out evaluations and all the usual shtick I'm supposed to say, I would like to open for questions. Do we have any questions?
You said the change to memory, live memory, does it work on any
SVN? So the live memory change is specifically for Windows Technical Preview guests on Windows Technical Preview hosts. So it's a very narrow thing right now. I'm not commenting on... If there are specific guests that you would like to see this supported on, let us know. Yep? No, it is not supported to virtualize a Hyper-V host. Yes, I do it all the time. It's a gross hack, and it works, but it doesn't let you run a virtual machine. So, something I would love us to support. So, the question is, would it be possible to convert a Generation 1 virtual machine to a Generation 2 virtual machine in an official way? And until you put that last bit on the end, I was all ready to go like, hey, we've got this great script. And so that is not in the build right now. That's good feedback. No, it's definitely, and something to be really clear about is that the script that John Howard published, while the script itself is not officially supported by Microsoft, the process is. So there is nothing in that script that, if someone sat down by hand and did it. So this is a bit vague, but basically, if you use that script and you then encounter a problem with your virtual machine afterwards, that's completely supported. You are in a supported configuration. The support statement around that script is specifically, hey, if something goes wrong with the script itself, don't call up Microsoft support. So any other questions? Okay, this is going to take too long. Actually, no, it's not going to take too long. Okay, for the people who haven't left, let's quickly try and do one last demo because replication has just finished setting up. I am so happy. That's one last demo for the people who didn't leave as soon as they could. start this. Okay. So here I have a virtual machine that I've got set up. It's got replication enabled. It's got a single virtual hard drive. And I'm going to go ahead and I am going to do a hot add of a virtual hard drive to that virtual machine. So nice PowerShell command, add virtual hard drive. And the first and exciting thing to point out is that replication is not going to fall over. It just continues working. Now, in the past, the next replication cycle that we would have hit, we would have gone into a critical state and said, hey, someone's changed the configuration. Now, the replication continues on successfully. If I bring up the settings for this virtual machine, what you'll actually see is there's the drive that we added. If I go down to replication settings, I can look at replication VHDs. That new drive has automatically been put into excluded from replication. So that's the first nice thing. But simple PowerShell commandlet, and that commandlet just says, get all the virtual hard disks that are in this virtual machine and add them to the replicated set, please. So that's gone ahead, and it was really quick, but it's already done the replication. It does a resync. If I come into the settings now, I can go and have a look at replication VHDs, and that VHD is included. And in fact, you can both add and remove virtual hard drives from the replication set live in the technical preview. It's also worth highlighting, because I always forget to mention this, all the work that we did around virtual machine upgrade also benefits Hyper-V replica. So you can now be doing replica between a 2012 R2 and the technical preview server in both directions, because as long as you don't upgrade the virtual machine configuration version, we maintain compatibility. So, with that, I am really done, and thank you all for your time.